Krishna was instructing Arjuna, giving him transcendental knowledge that would change his vision of how he was perceiving reality, because he was in such confusion having to fight on the battlefield, because he was seeing the death of so many beloved ones. And Krishna is explaining to him that it is not possible for either your beloveds or your enemy to die, because they are all eternal, as you are eternal, as I am eternal, and all the kings that are assembled here. Na tvaham jatu na sam na tamne nizana adipaha. The future they will never cease to be. Just think of how amazing that is. It points to a reality beyond what we can see. We usually think of reality as what we see, but this points to something completely different, to the eye of knowledge. We will see a different level of reality. Just like a child looks at fire and sees one thing and even wants to touch the fire. But the parents have eyes of knowledge, more experienced eyes, more accurate eyes. So when the child wants to touch the fire, what do the parents say? Oh, my dear child, please do not touch the fire, otherwise it will burn you and you will suffer so much. But the child doesn't have that vision. But someone with more knowledge sees things differently, and that affects how they deal in the world. So Krishna is telling this to Arjuna, trying to change through hearing, changing his intellectual understanding, his knowledge, and also changing how he's going to act. Because with his lack of knowledge, he doesn't want to fight. And when Krishna has completed giving him knowledge, he will fight. He wants to fight because he wants to please Krishna. And that is the ultimate knowledge that the Bhagavad Gita ends with, that we are Krishna's servants and our business is to act to please him. And when we act opposed to pleasing the Supreme Lord, opposite of that, when we act in a self-centered way to please ourselves, which is the way that ahankar vimudatma, bewildered by false ego, this is how we think. I want to please myself. What's in it for me? This is the way of viewing of the soul who is enwrapped in false ego. And rather than it bringing happiness or bringing the satisfaction that he imagines, it's clear to everyone that the identification with the body of the self and identification of the self just with the self as opposed to as a servant of Krishna, it just brings misery in life. So much so that the first principle of Buddhism is quite popular nowadays, is practically first principle is that life is suffering, and the solution to suffering therefore is get rid of the self. And the same point with Mayavada philosophy. The self suffers, so therefore the solution is to get rid of the self. But it's really a misplaced identity of the self that's the problem. The materialists think of the self as the body, doesn't find happiness in that way. And the more intellectualized materialists think of the self as the intelligence or mind, and they don't find happiness in that way. And therefore, the both of their conclusions is the annihilation of the self to stop the suffering which they can't escape from in the material world, but Krishna has a completely different solution, although he hasn't described it yet. But it is through more knowledge. The more knowledge is, we are not the body, we are not the mind, we are not the intelligence, we are eternal. We are eternal souls, but not only that, but we are Krishna's part and parcel. Mama eva angsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We are eternal. This is our eternal position. We're in relationship. We're in relationship. We are not alone. And everyone in this world is feeling alone. But we're in relationship. It's just that we have turned our back on that relationship. And then Krishna recommends the Krishna Buddha sees you forgetting Krishna. We turn our back on him. But what is the solution? Is Savadamam Pratyaza Mame Kamsaranam Vada. That we turn towards Krishna in our relationship with him, which is that we are his servant. So when the concept of who we are changes, again, it's not just a philosophical idea. When something should change, just like what's the use of having knowledge if you don't use it? Yes, see? The sneeze confirms all. If you know how to use the computer but don't use it, what is the use? If you know how to drive your car and don't use it, what is the use? If you know how to add and subtract and multiply and do differential equations and trigonometry and your algebra and your programming in C++ or whatever, but don't use it, what's the use? What is the use? So where it really reaches its fruit, where knowledge reaches its fruit, is in its application. So we take this knowledge that I'm Krishna's part, apostle, and we chant Krishna's names, which is basically it's a call. Essentially, it's a call to Krishna. The chanting of Krishna's names is a call to Krishna. Oh Lord, when will I again serve you? When will you accept me as your servant? That is the longing of the soul with knowledge. Oh Lord, when will you accept me again as your servant? That is the foundational meaning. So Krishna is gradually building up the knowledge he's giving Arjuna, and now he's starting with the most basic spiritual point that you are not your body. You are eternal. Your body is temporary. So he says, Ascharyavat pasyati kachid dinam Ascharyavat yadati tataiva chanya Ascharyat chainam anya shunoti Sudvapyanam vedanachayva kaschit. Oops, that's not the right verse. But we'll get to that one. That one is the wonderful verse, the amazing verse, because the word ascharya is used many times in that verse, and it means amazing. The soul's position is amazing. What does amazing mean? Yeah, not quite, but yeah, it's pretty quiet. It's surprising, yeah, but not quite surprising, but this combination of all these, what else?
Astounding.
Astounding, yeah. Is it, what does astounding mean, though? Amazing.
It's wonderful in a way that they change differently.
Yeah, that's really amazing. But it's so magnificent, so surprising, so astounding, that you're shocked of it. So the fact that we are not, this isn't me, because when I look in the mirror, I say, oh, hello, how are you today? It's me. I look in the mirror and I see myself. but that's not me, and I am eternal. Now that's amazing, because it's amazing because it's not what I see, it's not what I perceive with my baby-like conceptual knowledge. But because I don't see it, like, I don't see it that I'm not my body, that I'm an eternal soul, that doesn't mean it's not true. We just, it's like your child, he sees fire in one way, and his parents see fire in another way, and the scientist sees fire in another way. And the person who has the, so many different, we see according to our knowledge, our conceptual ability of knowledge. So Krishna says in text, he's told Arjuna to be steady, and nasato vidyate bhavo, nabhavo vidyate sita, ubayor abdristo antas, tvanayas tatsvadarsati. Those who are seers of the truth, and now we're going to go into a section that's very strongly on this point that we are not the body, but we are eternal souls. And the body is not me, but the soul, I am. Those who are seers of the truth have concluded, so those who actually see with accurate vision, because they have knowledge, they have concluded that of the non-existent, the material body, there is no endurance. And of the eternal soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. So the those who actually see conclude that that which is eternal, it never ceases to be. And that is how existing is defined. If it's eternal, it exists. If it's not eternal, it actually doesn't exist. So what do we mean by that? That something that is not eternal doesn't exist. Does this mean that the wall, is this wall eternal?
No.
No. Well, so on one level it doesn't exist. But if we ask our friend to hit it as hard as he possibly could with his fist, okay? It's better than your head anyway. To find out if it exists or not. We're convinced philosophically this doesn't exist, so I hit it as hard as I can with my fist and boy, for something that doesn't exist, it really seems like it exists. But what we mean, that it doesn't exist, that it's always changing. We may see it as a steady piece of existence, like my body. If we see each other every day, we don't see any change. But if we don't see each other if we only see each other once a year, then very quickly we'll see that the body has, it's changed. It didn't really exist because it's always in flux. It's always in movement. But on the other hand, the energy source of the body, the soul, he remains the same. And because really we identify with the soul, with ourselves, we don't feel the changing of the body. But when people see us, they see, you've really, we also say it to others, even though we study the philosophy and everything, and people said it to us and when we were young. But if there's someone who's like a young boy who's 8 years old, and then you don't see him until he's 15. It's shocking, because it's the same person, but his body has completely transformed. So actually, that body didn't exist. as a stable entity, because it was shifting continuously, even though we didn't perceive it as such. But actually, it was always changing. So something that exists in one form at that moment, and it's a completely different form at the next moment, we don't really think it exists. It's an illusion. Its existence is illusory. So that's what Krishna is telling Arjuna. And also he's saying, those who are tattva darshabi, those who see the truth, this is what they perceive, that which really exists is eternal, and that which doesn't exist is temporary. So Arjuna, my dear Arjuna, Krishna is saying, by your lamentation before this battle is to take place, by the nature of your lamentation, we can understand that you are not a tattva darshabi, you don't see the truth. You are not seeing accurately. So Krishna is chastising Arjuna again. And then he says, Avinashi, imperishable to Tadvidhi, that which pervades the entire body, you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. So the body is temporary, and the soul, the person, is eternal. That which pervades every part of the body is eternal. Consciousness of the person is eternal. And the person is also eternal. If his consciousness is eternal, that means he's eternal. Because of the symptom of his existence is his consciousness. And his consciousness is eternal. The thing that causes the consciousness is also eternal. No one is able to destroy, Krishna says, that imperishable soul. Remember, Arjuna is on the battlefield, and he's hesitating to fight, to do his duty of fighting in this most difficult of circumstances, because he doesn't want to see anyone killed. And Krishna is saying, you cannot kill anyone, because the soul is imperishable. He cannot be killed. It is indestructible. The soul is indestructible. We are indestructible. Now, how does that make you feel? Well, okay, well, just for the sake of the Bhagavad Gita class, let's imagine that you believed it. How do you feel that you're indestructible and eternal and imperishable? Well, I would think so. So our lack of knowledge causes our insecurity, our lack of safety, and etc., our lack of realization. And just see how that works. We don't feel safe, we don't feel secure, we're always worried, we're always fearful, and we try to solve the problem, not by getting knowledge and realization, but by building up things that don't exist around us to protect us. Because things that don't exist are the things that are imperishable, always changing. Perishable, always changing. So, it doesn't help, does it? If you build an imaginary wall around you to protect you, how is that? Or a non-existent wall around you, how is that going to protect you from anything? So therefore, the materialistic solution to an spiritual problem is no solution at all, because it's like if we're having a dream that a tiger is attacking us, and in the dream we're trying to put the tiger in a cage or something like that. That's not the solution. The simple solution is just wake up and enter real life. So, of course, one question that comes up is how to deepen our realization. How to deepen our realization? This is the essential question, isn't it? Krishna is saying this. Arjuna is accepting it. And we hear it and think, oh, that's an interesting idea. But I've heard it already. What's the next book we're going to read or something like that? But how to actually realize our eternal relationship with Krishna and live in that relationship. So it becomes the driving force, the passion of our life, of our existence, our relationship with Krishna. So it's not something theoretical or intellectual, but it is our life. How to get our realization so deep that it is our life. And if our realization isn't so deep, then what will happen at the time we are dying? What will we hold on to? We'll hold on to what we perceive as real. And if we don't think that is real, we'll think this is real. And just try to hold on to the sinking ship of the material body as it's dying. See how much pleasure and security that gives. Or try to hold on to the great safety of life, the bank account, or the family members, or our intelligence, or our strength, or our cleverness, or all the things that we hold on to when we're in difficulty. But they're just like holding on to like smoke and fog, basically. When you're in the airplane and you see the big thick clouds and they're so thick and nice and you, it really looks, if you could just jump out, you'd have such a nice soft landing on these cotton clouds. But what would happen? You'd see them for what they are. It's basically nothing there. So there is an urgency in Krishna consciousness, a greater urgency to become realized. Because our life is at stake. So Krishna continues. Neither he who thinks the living entity the slayer, the killer, nor he who thinks it is slain, is in knowledge. He's jumping around here. Yeah, 18. The material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Does anyone doubt that? The material body is sure to come to an end. We shouldn't doubt that. But Krishna says something a little bit more. The material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. So it's the soul's body. The body is what comes to an end. But the soul is indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal. Doesn't come to an end. And then Krishna says something quite astounding in text 18. Therefore, considering this, Arjuna, considering that the body must die and the soul can never die, therefore fight. Fight, O descendant of Bharata. What's interesting about that? How would one usually think? What's interesting about that? Therefore fight.
If I'm eternal, as you're instructing, and the
Why should I fight for something temporary, like a kingdom, like so many bodies? Why should I? So this is the kind of question and confusion that's going to prompt Arjuna's question in chapter 3 and chapter 5 in the beginning of, I mean, if I'm eternal, why should I engage in something temporary like a battle? For temporary gain, why should the eternal soul act? Because this is naturally what one would think. But Krishna says, fight, O descendant of Bharata, because you are a warrior and this is your duty. And not only that, the ultimate reason is that I desire the fight. Because really this is why Krishna has come. He's assembled all the military forces in the world in one place, practically speaking. And in one 18-day battle, they will all be removed. So, Nimitta Karan Bhava Savya Sachin, Krishna is asking Arjuna to be instrumental in my mission. And that is the perfection of a soul's existence. And this is actually what brings happiness to the soul, to a person, when he becomes instrumental for Krishna. This is the pleasure of a devotee, to be used by Krishna. And every devotee, even an aspiring devotee, who has done some service or feels that somehow Krishna used him to do some service, has experience of this, that yes, this is, it's so simple in one sense, but this is the satisfaction that the soul is longing for, the satisfaction that comes from him wanting to please Krishna and Krishna accepting his service and using him as he desires. Krishna continues. For the soul, there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being. The soul is not born. He does not come into being. He has not come into being. He does not come into being and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever existing and primeval. He is there always. He is not slain when the body is slain. Hanyate, hanyamane, sarire. O Partha, how can a person who knows that the soul is indestructible, eternal, what does indestructible mean? Cannot be destroyed. Eternal. Can something eternal be destroyed? No. Unborn and immutable, unchangeable, kill anyone or cause anyone to kill. As a person puts on new garments, so Krishna is now going to give an example of the relationship between the soul, and which is eternal, and the temporary material body, to help Arjuna and us understand. In a very famous verse, and this is, and our acharyas say that this particular verse, so Krishna said that the soul is eternal and the body's temporary, and then Arjuna may be thinking, okay, but I'll be the cause of these people, if I fight in this battlefield, I'll be the cause of their changing their bodies. So Krishna's answer is that if you don't fight, do you think they're not going to change their bodies? Do you think they're not going to die? Is it you, your fighting or not fighting, that's going to bring about the death of their bodies? And the answer is, of course, no. It's inevitable for everyone. It's some point or another. It is simply inevitable. So Krishna says, Vashamsi jirnani yatarvahaya navani grananti naro aparani tata sharirani vahaya jirnani anyani samyadi navani dehi. As a person puts on new garments, new clothes, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. Wow, what an example. It's something that we all experience. The putting on new garments, the taking off of old garments, discarding the old ones, putting on fresh ones. Over the body. So in this example, the body is the person and the clothes represent the body. Just as a person changes his clothes, that's what death and birth are like. The removal of something external. What an amazing, why is that amazing? Yes, thank you. Why else do you think that's amazing? Well, just think about the example. Putting on clothes, taking off clothes. Dropping the body, death and birth. Why, anyway, instead of making you read my mind, I'll tell you what I thought is, it just sounds so simple. It just sounds so simple. Krishna's making it sound so simple, but yet, we don't think of death and birth in that simple way. Just the discarding of old clothes and the putting on of new clothes. No one laments when you find out your clothes are ripped and dirty and are full of holes, and you just throw them away, and you don't think, oh, and all your friends don't cry and everything like that. But look, that's what Krishna's comparing death to. Just simply the giving up of old, useless clothes. Anyway, I thought it was quite shocking, amazing. So from the point of view of knowledge, and also from the point of view of eternity, this is what it's like. Because right now, just accepting the principle here, that the soul is eternal and there's a succession of bodies for the soul. So we cry when the body drops to the ground and the soul moves on. And we're happy when the little... But that's because our time, temporal time frame of reference is a long time, is 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. But if you took a movie of one soul over 5,000 years and sped it up really fast, you'd see him taking new bodies and dropping bodies just like changing clothes. You'd see now he's got an elephant body and he's powerful and walking in that elephant way and he's got that huge... What's that called in... Yes, I know the English word. Anyway, what's the... Hindi word for it. Huh? Sun. Is that Hindi? Yeah. Huh? But I know in Sanskrit the elephant is called Asti. Yes? And it's like Hati, the hand, because he's got his, it's like another hand. His trunk is like his hand. So, and then he has an elephant body. He's so big and he eats so much. And then it drops. And then he takes a mouse body. And then it drops. And he takes a cat body. And then a lion body. And then a human body. And it drops. And then he takes a... What's the next one?
Monkey.
Yes, of course. What else would he take? A monkey body. And then he... Monkey business. And then it drops. And then another body. And even monkeys, you see this in Vrindavan, when a monkey dies, first of all, you don't see them very often. Have you ever seen a dead monkey body? Yeah? Yeah. Electrocuted or what? Or old age?
There was an old monkey down in the
banks of Veracruz. Wow! That's a special monkey. He said, okay, goodbye. Okay, I made a mistake and I'm a monkey now. Okay. But when a monkey dies, literally, all the members of his monkey family get really angry. And you have to keep away. They stand around and go, you have to keep away because they're angry. Because one of their friends has died. That one, probably all his friends were just having kirtan or something like that.
Very old.
Huh?
Very old, he was alive.
Huh?
He was very, very old, he was alive.
Yeah. Monkey Maharaj, that was. It's quite amazing. As a person, it's just that casual. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul simply accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones.
Wow.
Different perspective on life and life's purpose and what's important and what's not important. If we see someone who's only interested in their clothes and the one pair of clothes that they wear all the time, they're just, you know, just always, continuously, just missing, making sure and everything's getting a little bit of dust off, and every, continuously, we would think that they are what?
Nothing.
Huh?
Nothing.
Yes. Or you would say, nowadays they say OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Something wrong, but that's just how we are when there's a body, with the bodies, with our body, because it's my body. So Krishna says, the soul, different from the body certainly, can never be cut to pieces by any weapon. Nor burned by fire, because all these, this is what's going to happen in the battle of Kurukshetra, that everyone, these are the kind of weapons that the Kshatriyas in those days, they used. There were fire weapons and water weapons and wind weapons. But the soul can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. The individual soul is unbreakable, insoluble, can neither be burned nor dried. He is everlasting, present everywhere. There are souls everywhere, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. It is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable, and immutable. Knowing this, we should not grieve for the body. What does grieve mean?
Lament.
Because, again, the essential issue that Krishna is confronting with Arjuna is him not wishing to fight because of the death that his fighting will cause. If, however, now Krishna changes his argument here in 26, Atatcha, if, however, you think that the soul or the symptoms of life is always born and dies forever, In other words, if you think that the soul is the body, excuse me, the person is the body. So he just explained that the soul is eternal. But okay, say if you don't believe that, and you think that the body is the self, and the body at some point comes into being, the person comes into being, and at some point, death means it's over, and the chemicals of the body are dispersed. So Krishna says, if that's your viewpoint, if you don't believe in the eternal existence of the soul, if you think that the soul or the symptoms of life is always born and dies forever, you still have no reason to lament, Almighty Om. And as Prabhupada says in his purport, if the body is a combination of physical elements, and at a certain stage the life symptoms develop by interaction of the physical and chemical elements, if that's your viewpoint, like the modern atheistical evolutionary viewpoint is, then what's the problem? Who will lament if a bag of chemicals is lost? What's the big deal again? So either way, if you accept, O Arjuna, the eternality of the soul, you should do your duty and fight. You cannot cause harm to any soul or person on the battlefield. And if you think, on the other hand, that the people who you'll kill are just chemicals that are doomed to die, to disperse in time anyway, then also you should do your duty and fight. So either way, of course, Krishna doesn't accept this verse, but he's just pushing Arjuna. Whether Arjuna accepted the Vedic conclusion that there is an atomic soul, or he did not believe in the existence of the soul, he had no reason to lament. 27. For one who has taken his birth, death, excuse me, one who has taken his birth is sure to die, and after death, one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. All created beings are unmanifest in their beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifested again when annihilated. So what need is there for lamentation? This is the cycle of life. And part of life is the coming into existence of the person, and part of life is his living his life, and part of life is Katamogya. It's going. It's gone. Going, going, gone. Death. This is the cycle. Everyone knows it. And when we see very, very old people and we ask them what it was like when they're young, it sounds so peculiar. I remember at some point there was people who are living today when they're, or even in, they were living at a time, there are actually people who are alive today who were living at a time when there were no mobile phones and no computers and no internet. Is that inconceivable? How could they exist? And even when I first came to Australia in the early 70s, they used to deliver milk in horse-drawn carriages, carts, horse-drawn, what do they call those things? Carts. Yeah. They used to deliver the milk, and you hear them in the morning clipping and coughing down the streets. It's inconceivable now, isn't it? And the milk, the milk bottles were like this big, and they were actual bottles made out of glass. Has anyone ever seen milk in a glass bottle? But not in Australia, right? Just plastic cartons or something now. And there was this, on the top of it was this much cream. And and you could drink the water. Melbourne was famous for having such good water. They could drink it right out of the tap. Nowadays, it's such proper. Does anyone drink water out of the tap, unfiltered? No, very dangerous. But in those days, because they were primitive, and they didn't have internets and things like that. Why do they call it an internet? Because I guess you get caught in it. That's what happens with the internet. You get caught in the net. But in any case, you enter the net. They should call it the enter the net. Internet. So what is the need? So, this is life. It goes on, and then it's over, and then one goes to another body according to what one desires and according to what one deserves. Adishya manasyam misho pasevate yam yam vapi sunam balantya danyante. So once one has picks up this philosophy, then life and what we do and what we think and what we want has some significance for us. Suddenly, life isn't to be lived in a whimsical way, just figuring out ways to waste time. Suddenly, there's significance to it. That what we do and think and want and how we act is important. Maybe not for the world, but at least for us. Because this cycle of birth, staying for some time, dying, birth, staying for some time, dying, changing bodies to another form, birth in that form, it can go on basically forever, or it can end. And how we deal with our life determines our next birth, either materially or spiritually. What do you think about that? Weighty, it's heavy actually. And usually, I don't usually think of that. It means that there's consequence to how I act. And we have to face the consequences of how we act. Well, how does that make you feel? How does that make you feel? Makes me feel scared, personally. But anyway, you have a taste for kirtan. You're lucky. Krishna bless you. Yeah, life has a purpose. Because it's obvious in the sense that suddenly we're born. We were talking about this. And we can't remember, but we know we were born. And we're growing up, and at some point we sort of become conscious of, well, here I am. But how did I get into this particular situation? In this particular body? You were born in Kenya. You were born in Konkani.
Konkani.
Yeah, I can't. Konkani. How do you say it?
Konkani.
Yes, that wonderful place. It's so green there. It's between the sea and the mountains on the west coast, between Bombay and
Ratnagiri.
Even further, to all the way to Karnataka. So one person is born there, or two people. You two, yes? Konkani. And some person is born in Melbourne, just suddenly finds himself popping into existence. There I am, boing, here I am. And then Malaysia and Philippines and New Zealand and New York and Kenya and Perth and Singapore. We were born here or there. And Perth, and how did all this happen? I mean, how did it happen? Why? Very mysterious. So a life not examined. So therefore human life means to ask these questions. How did I get here? And as soon as you ask, well, what caused me to get here? The next question is, well, where am I going? Waiting. Some look on the soul. Here's that amazing verse. Yes, chariyavat pashikas chidayinam. Some look on the soul as amazing. Some describe him as amazing. And some hear of him as amazing. While others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. So either looking or describing or hearing. It's amazing. The soul. It's so powerful that it is giving life to the body. It makes it appear that the body is alive, but it isn't the body that's alive, because the instant the soul leaves the body, you have a dead body that's no more alive than a piece of wood. In one instant, the living body turns into a piece of wood, like a piece of wood. Who has seen this, the instant? I've seen it. You've seen it. In one moment, even though the person could be very sick and almost with almost no life in their body, and then boom, in one moment, it's completely different. The mystery of life is gone. What Krishna is saying, it's mysterious in one sense, but it's not mysterious in another. And here's the, and because he's giving knowledge of what the mystery of life is. It's life is the soul. Life is not coming from the body. And the scientists say, no, life comes from the body. We say, no, Krishna says, life comes from the soul. And they say, well, that's your faith. But we haven't seen the soul. And they say, but life comes from matter. And we say, that's your faith. Because we haven't seen you make life out of matter. But we're scientists. No, you're just, it's another religion, that's all, faith. It's not faith versus reason, it's faith and faith. No one has done this. No one has made, put the chemicals in the test tube, and and Adrian comes out or something, or even a mosquito. Not to compare it to a mosquito, but even a mosquito or a little amoeba or one-celled animal, even a paramecium, even done that. But yet they accuse us, religious people, of being, everything is based on faith, but we're based on reason and science. So, and we're taught this in school. Were you taught that in school? Evolution, and that life comes from chemicals? Were you taught that in school? Oh, not that life comes from chemicals or anything ridiculous, but that we come from monkeys. Okay. But by the way, they did teach you that. Huh? Well, that's good. something good about school, no one pays attention. Did you get good grades in school? Did your mother get angry at you? Sometimes. Do you have brothers and other brothers and sisters? No brothers and sisters? Only him. What a team. Pretty good. The two of you. Where, and your parents are where? And it's just two of you here. Boy, they really trust you. Wow. They're putting their trust in the right place, too. Some look on the soul is amazing. Some describe him as amazing. Some hear of him as amazing. While others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. Considering your O descendant of Bharata, so Krishna is going to summarize the preceding verses, and here we shall end. O descendant of Bharata, he who dwells in the body can never be slain. Therefore, you need not grieve for any living being. Okay, so we'll end this section. If you have any questions or comments? Yes.
Can you describe what is part and parcel? I don't quite understand that. I understand part, but what is parcel?
Okay. Parcel? You know what a parcel is, yes? Okay, but why do we say part and parcel? So, because, first of all, it's a term that Prabhupada used. So a part, you can be part of God, like a drop of water is part of the ocean, right? Or a cup of water is part of the ocean. You can take, you're part of the ocean in the cup. But then you can pour it back in and it doesn't remain as an individual. So partially describes the relationship between the part and the whole, but it doesn't describe its individuality, the non-reducible individuality. But the concept of parcel is an individual unit. So a parcel doesn't have to be part of anything, but it's that describes the individual unit element. And the part describes the relationship between the part and the whole. So part and parcel implies that we are part of the Supreme, but we are also individual units, individual souls. Okay?
One more question.
Yeah.
It is said that the soul is eternal, unborn. And you said yesterday that we are like the rays, sun rays.
Yes.
The sun. So as the sun comes, the rays come at the same time.
Yes.
Then in this equation, how did the expansions of Krishna come into picture? So did they also exist all the time, or how did Krishna expand into that, or did they come after us?
Oh. Yeah. That which is eternal is ever existing in this understanding. So they eternally exist. Yes. And also there's the expansions and also the shakti, the energy. And the jivas, the living entities, they are also one of the energies of the Lord. So as soon as the energy as soon as the sun exists, the energies exist. So your question is about the expansions, yes. At all, it's not possible for us to understand because we have a time-based way of understanding things. But Krishna is the source, but yet he's the cause of all causes of akarana karanam, but yet everything exists eternally, the jivas and the expansions of the Lord. So there's an inconceivable element of this. Because when we think of Krishna as the source, naturally we think that he existed prior, before. So we use that example of the sun and the sun rays to help us understand something that we essentially can't understand.
If we are eternal, then why is it that the real life sort of like the Goswami, they grieve when like on the God as a Sumer with the body?
Because they miss them. They're grieving for their own. They won't be able to see them anymore. Like that. Not that they're grieving that that person doesn't exist. Or that person has gone to a worse place, but they have so much love and they understand that I will not be able to relate to this person who I love any longer on this level, and therefore they lament. It's not that spiritual knowledge removes individual feelings, but they're just more refined, I would say.
Separation.
Yeah, separation, but not exactly from the body, but just from the situation where they can associate. Yeah, there's the most, the song of Narottama Das, Jayanilo. Prema Dana Karuna Pracho. It's very, very songs of deep separation from all the great devotees that he wasn't able to see and have their association or experience. Just imagine that Prabhupada was right here with us physically as I have the fortune to see him. And he was so powerful and so effulgent, and as not just effulgence coming out of his head, but he was just very unique and very, very sweet. And his association was something so wonderful and very powerful when you're on your best behavior when you're with him. And so to have that kind of association that's so uplifting, and then when such a great soul leaves, it's not the time, well, he's not his body, and I'm not my body. There's something much deeper than that, than this simple philosophical point. It's that the soul is longing for the association of that soul. Is that okay? Yeah, it's something on a deeper level, even though it may appear to be like that. Anyone want to add anything?
Does that mean that there is no harm in lamenting the loss of your loved ones? Like when they
die? Well, whether there's harm or not, we will do it anyway. That's one point. Say if when your parents leave this world, there's a natural grief that comes to the heart. One of the connection between their body and your body. So if one actually isn't on the level of realizing the eternal nature of the person and your own eternal nature, and then just tries to, from the point of view of just their mind, oh, I read in the Bhagavad Gita that there's no reason to lament and things like that, and just imposes a philosophical idea on their mind that will be artificial and pretending. And in devotional service, we don't pretend. So that's one point right there, that we don't pretend. Feeling lamentation and lament. So maybe it's not the highest platform. So that means I'm not on the highest platform, but I already knew that. So the harm of all type of material consciousness is that it entangles us in the material world. And the cure for the harmful thing is advancement. But we don't act unnaturally either. That because of the connection, for example, between the bodies of the mother and the daughter, naturally there'll be tears. And when someone is in that part of their grieving and lamentation, it's not very effective to preach to them this kind of philosophy. That's the time to be there with them. And then later on, when it cools down, then some philosophy is there that this person who you're missing on one level, and that's legitimate, they've helped you in so many ways, but that person has already moved on. He's already moved on. And maybe he's in another body right now, and maybe he doesn't even know that you are crying for him as father, and maybe he's someone else's baby right now. So that makes so that but the time of deep lamentation, maybe it's not the time to think so philosophically. It doesn't do any good, practically speaking. And then, but what does also do good is you think that the soul who is in my father's body or my mother's body or something has moved on, and what could I do to serve that soul who's given me so much? And then there's so many things that can be done for the eternal spiritual benefit of that soul. Is that all right? What's your question?
Yesterday you said you did.
That's a wrong question. Oh, just ask it. I'll give you a wrong answer. No, okay. Yes.
One question. Everyone is dying, but I mean, for my own personal experience, I read the scriptures. And I know that I'm dying. But after a while, I forget, you know. Like, illusion is so strong that, you know, like, you remember, you forget, you remember, you forget. You know, so, like, one doesn't put that sort of seriousness in, spiritual life. But if I really understand that time, you know, I'm going to die, or just discarding this, discarding this body, you know, seriously, then I will really, you know, do, you know, everything very nicely and really be careful with, you know, even every thought, every action, everything, you know, but I feel like illusion is also very, very powerful, as you know, it just shifts you from one end to the other in one time, and it's constantly moving. Then how to be really focused to be Krishna conscious.
So how to become Krishna conscious? The basic question. Yeah, that's our whole process of Krishna consciousness is an answer to that question, beginning with association of devotees. if you associate with those who not only remind you that you're going to die because you don't want to be with people, so you're going to die, you're going to die. I mean, it's not the International Society for Death Consciousness. It's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We want to fall in love with Krishna. So this type of preaching about the temporary nature of the material world is actually the preaching of jnanis. It's not exactly the preaching of devotional service. But because we're overly attached to matter, we adopt this type of preaching. But really the devotees are neutral in relationship to the material world, and they want to develop their attachment to Krishna and use everything for the pleasure of Krishna. So the body should be used for the pleasure of Krishna. Everything that is by our fate is given to us, or placed within our hands to be used for Krishna's pleasure, and that brings us pleasure. So how to become more advanced is the basic question, and that of course in the association of devotees, we chant Krishna's names, we hear Srimad Bhagavatam and Srimad Bhagavad Gita, we worship the deities with great faith, we live in a holy place and go to holy places, Mathura, Vrindavan, Vas, Mayapur, associate with devotees and chant Krishna's names here. Yeah, it's Panch Anga Bhakti. 5 items are especially important. So we can dedicate our life to that.
Mm-hmm.
And help others. Helping others is very helpful for ourselves too. So this is the essential question. How to advance, how to realize what we hear. How to consistently realize. Question, how to develop love for Krishna. This is everything for us, the answer to that question. So in the association of devotees, chant Krishna's names, hear the Bhagavatam, worship the deity, and live in a holy place and live a holy life.
So in one sense, it's not to allow that Maya to come into one's life, because sometimes I feel too much associations, you know, with people, and sometimes we talk this and that, and then we tend to, like, the mind will move here and there.
Yeah,
and
sure. So how do you get rid of darkness?
Right.
Not by, say, trying to sweep out the darkness, but just by turning on the light. So we should keep in the light of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Serving Krishna. So how do we serve Krishna? By chanting his names, by worshipping the deity, by hearing about him is also service. By speaking about him, by, you know, all these things are all service. That's the light. How do you do that? How do you do that when you're such an attraction to darkness? We have to not increase our attachment to darkness too. Try to get a taste for the service and move in that direction in a practical way, according to who we are and what our practical capacity is. But move we should. Don't look back, look forward. But this is that question is such a good question that it'd be such a nice thing to ask each and every devotee, how do they deal with that? Because we all have to deal with that. You know, how do you deal with it, Keshe
Gopalpur?
Because you live, you know, you have work to do, you go to the airport, you have to see so many people, that energy, how do you, How do you maintain?
I try to invite some people who I meet to my temple. That way I feel remembered by Krishna. Also, because I'm 15, since then I came to temple.
When?
Also there. Last month.
Congratulations.
Even still, I was also thinking about death. Many people dying, 15. Thinking about death is also reminding me. I don't know how to try it other than thinking about Krishna.
What do you do? You also have to deal, you deal in the world?
I can't do anything.
But what do you do when you're not feeling useless?
I just like to read.
Yeah. What do you like to read?
The story of Christian intercessors.
From what books?
Sorry?
What books?
I read from the Mahabharata.
Oh, that's right. Last year you were reading the Mahabharata. And you? Yeah. Krishna, one thing to do is to look where your gifts and your tendencies are. Like you have such a strong tendency to read. And you have your tendency, you love to cook and serve the devotees. Okay, so Gopal also has that and speak about Krishna. And we know what you are. Kirtan. So whatever Krishna has given you, whatever door Krishna opens to you has given you, just walk through that door. Try to enlarge that door. Haripai, what do you do? You also have to work in the...
I seem to, from reading, I think try my best to, apart from doing the associating and what I try to use what happens to me in my actual life to apply the teaching of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says behind everything is Krishna, and I read in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna, whatever we experience, the source of it is Krishna, and whatever we experience is always for our good. So when I experience things in my life, in my family or at work, when someone says something that's nasty or hurtful, I would have straight away to go back to the teaching that actually nothing can hurt the soul. So if I respond with red eyes, that means I have forgotten that. I've forgotten that behind it is Krishna giving me a chance to use the knowledge to know that actually what that person is saying, I don't see that as that person. I try to see that behind it is Krishna's grace giving me that experience. And the other grace is the instructions where actually these things can't really hurt you. So instead of responding in the animalistic way, which is just survival or attack, I try to see it as a blessing. So instead of getting that anger into me, and when anger comes straight away, I think of Krishna. So at that point, I try to use that to rise about it, remembering the teachings of trying.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What happens when, are you always successful in doing this?
When I fail, I don't see it as that person's fault. I see it as my forgetfulness of truth.
And what do you do when you fail?
Correct it.
How do you correct it?
By knowing that actually, if I remember Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita that I'm a soul, and these things actually can't hurt me, it's Krishna's mercy giving me a chance to practice.
That's when you succeed, you're thinking of that. But when you fail to do that, or you get angry or something like that in a circumstance, then what do you do?
As you said, normally if you remember the teachings, that's why the association is so important, to hear these things. And I just correct myself, and if
I again
to apologize to the person, I do. So basically, I try to correct myself instead of blaming the other person. Because behind it, Krishna says in Bhagavatam, everything that's happening behind it is me. But we are seeing it as the jiva who is doing it.
of course, the jiva is identified with ignorance, and if he attacks you, then of course, with his red eyes, then he has to bear the fruit of that, or he goes through his.
So what I understand you're saying is that you try to apply the, what
yes.
you read.
Yes, apply the teaching, because the Krishna says, nothing can hurt you, not even fire, water, everything, a few words, if it hurts you, that really happened. You see, and Bhagavatam, this few weeks I read previously, Krishna says, whatever I do for you is for your good. So when we see like that, then it becomes mercy. But when we forget that, then that person is so nasty, I have to attack you back. Then it binds us into that. We still have to experience that down the track. But when you pass that, then you see, gee, this Krishna consciousness is so good. I didn't get angry. I'm happy. I can still think of Krishna. And instead of seeing that person as my enemy, I just thank you for being used by Krishna to give me a chance to practice because of my weakness. So there's no hatred for that person.
So this way one becomes above
yeah, right
the modes.
Those modes, because ultimately they're just modes which can't hurt the soul. So that's why the discussions and talking with devotees and listening to that, that's what how you explain this now. It's helpful. Without that instruction, it's impossible to think like that. It's impossible. So it is a sort of somebody causing you so much pain, actually use the modes to rise. So the modes can actually pull you down or help you to rise. Because they're neither good nor bad, it's just the most. Try to.
Yeah,
that's right. Use it.
And then when you don't succeed, you try again.
Try again, yes.
That's all we can do. Just try again. But Kurt, understand where we made our fault.
That's right. But it has to go together with the
association and hearing.
Yeah,
and all
the others have to be there, otherwise it's just
yeah.
hearing.
Yeah. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Radha Gopinath ki jai.